I want to deal with membership right away. We made, I don't have the minutes from the executive session that we had a couple, two sessions ago, but the executive session we, my recollection is we agreed for Mr. Moody to be a member, and we did not, we were walking out when I remembered that we had to be in public session to vote. No, we weren't in public session, we were walking out. Yeah, so this is a public session, I'd like to do what we did back then, and we'll do so right now. We'll be in, entertain a motion for membership.
So, motion to assess the appointment of Mr. Mooney?
Yes.
That's your motion.
Okay, previously discussed, okay. Any issues, problems?
Second.
Any issues, complaints, questions? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No opposed. You know, we still have to wait for the director, and there's a new director at this point. Mike was, we were talking earlier that membership, apparently it's believed that we need to, we can make a nomination. The committee makes a nomination to the director who then can approve it. Access was doing it the other way around, if you remember. They had times made, they approved people and said, hey, we've approved this person, and then sent the name to us.
They appointed an access to approve.
Yeah, and they appointed it. So the director appoints, but only on our nomination. So it's, and in the past, actually, we thought we acted as the director, that the committee would essentially appoint and get the consent with advice of the director. The director does not have the power of veto, but I think we don't need to go yet. So, do you have any questions on that issue process that we nominate two to three, right, to the director? The director then will either yay or nay the nominee from this committee. That's where I stand.
Correct. And so the interpretation of that would be that ADOA and the director's office is not staffing the committee. So the committee takes a vote in on who they want to adopt, and then the director of ADOA will issue an appointment letter just confirming that member has been appointed. And that satisfies the statutory requirement and the requirement under rule, which is currently that the committee, I believe, I don't have the rule in front of me, but it's like confirms its members. Yeah.
So there's a new director, or we're just saying that Access director no longer does it.
Access doesn't anymore. It's always it's obvious the third or the ADOA director.
So is there a new ADOA director? Is that what you said?
We'll have a report on that later.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean there is. Because the last lesson left, so there is in the last week or so, 10 days. But I just want to talk about the nomination process and application process. Is that clear as mud? That's very clear.
Yeah, it just makes me wonder. This is obviously going to be very low on a new director's priority list. I wonder how long it's going to take.
Mike and Chris were very diligent, said they'd get it within, try and get to it within 24 hours. So I don't see that as being I think it's more pro forma.
Okay.
Unless someone like Holly or I apply, then it won't be.
Keep your badge.
So I also, so Mr. Moody will wait for the director. We don't sense a problem with that. And I apologize for not having taken care of this by the proper vote for you. So secondly, I would like, Ms. Jorgensen has not been attending. I've sent emails, attempted to contact her. We need to vote her off the committee with thanks to her previous representation, but we need to do it formally because she counts towards a quorum at the point. So we talked about this, got to entertain a motion that Ms. Jorgensen, just because of lack of attendance and apparent possible conflict, that.
And I didn't see her, and I asked her, and she just recognized probably her new role was a conflict, so she might have just.
So she did. Can we attend a motion to that effect?
What's her new role?
She is one of the Austin Digital Care leaders for, I think, CareFirst.
CareFirst?
Yes.
So Jeff Jorgensen, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's now removed.
She's recused herself. Yeah, because she recognizes the conflict of interest.
What does she do?
She's the manager of Individual and Family Office of Individual and Family Affairs. She'll be heading up our peer services for WIF.
Well, it sounds like the whole world is individual and family.
Every one of those agency contracts has to have an Office of Individual Family Affairs and a Veterans Rep as part of their contract. So there's seven new ones.
Thank you. Chair, let's say a motion.
So moved.
Second. Okay, let's name who seconded.
Josh seconded.
All in favor of the resend the letter and form, as of now formally taken off the committee. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay, a unanimous decision here. This is to the audience, and I put this on the agenda for if we have updates from, you know, UHC or from, Care First or any of you folks who would be like to give us any updates about your agency or things you think we ought to know. I appreciate you attending, and the whole committee really appreciates you attending.
Can we take one step back, Chair?
Yeah.
Kathy Rowe has applied 3 months ago. She comes out how many meetings?
This is the fourth meeting.
So why aren't we voting on Kathy?
Because I Chris told me you were going to be voting on me tonight.
Well, Chris, first of all, you've all looked at the her resume, you all have it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one of them can vote. One of the that's fine.
And
Chris doesn't have the right to tell you what's going to be voted on or not. That wasn't appropriate to do so. By the way, I'm the one who he wasn't clear on that. That was what I said. My question still is, and I think that we broke that rule with Mr. Moody, is that we were looking at filling the roles that were statutorily necessary initially. And that was the issue we talked about and voted on as a priority of this committee. What role does Kathy fit in that in the project committee?
Yeah, that was my question. So is there, when the application comes through, I did not see that on the application.
Special education and mental health.
So I believe
we have an education.
I do not believe we have an education.
Told me to check that box.
Yeah.
Well, because you have expertise.
Yeah.
But wait, I mean, did you feel like, I don't want Chris telling
you. That was my career. That was my career.
I know, I saw your resume. Yeah, I don't want Chris telling people what box to check. I want the people who apply to check the boxes that they feel are appropriate.
But they probably did mental health. I put the mental health down, and then after looking at the resume, he was like, you can sit in there too.
Absolutely.
So,
we used to have, obviously, we had Craig, who was, and by the way, I saw him not long ago, and he's up to say hello to the committee. So that does that meet the standard? What do you think, Holly?
I think she meets the standard. I mean, we don't have a criteria. We don't have a definition for the term. So if we don't have it, and there's not one in the statute, and there's not one in the reg. Spent your career in special ed, I think you qualify for special ed.
As education, right?
Yeah.
Good. And that helps us fill the required statutory slots.
And I also think it's good that Chris or somebody is helping people who are filling it out.
I do.
To help check boxes.
I agree, but it is. It's very helpful, but when I say we had you fill the check right
now. Well, the thing is, I to make it quicker and make it easier, I came down his office to fill out.
Wow.
I was having a problem online with this stupid fillable one. So I said, I'm having a pickle. So I said, is it okay if I just come down and fill out an application just down at your office? So he says, yeah, sure. And
good.
So that's what I did. And
was the application PDF or Word?
PDF.
You know what would be helpful, I don't know about you guys, but I think it'd be helpful to have going Word documents, because most people that I know don't have a converter and can't.
It's a fillable PDF form, so you don't need, you just click it and type in it. But that's okay, we're happy to facilitate either way. I can convert it to Word if somebody has it.
Whatever.
Either way, it works for me.
I'm just a friendly people person, so it makes,
And I thank you for attending and being patient as well. This is a transition from August to now, and you've been very good at that. And you guys have been more than August, it must be before that. If I remember right, Josh?
April,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Chair will entertain a motion at this time for acceptance in this role and forwarding her application to the director.
Second.
Discussion, further discussion. I will note that this role needs to requirements of some of the membership of having some educational background, teaching education background, which is important.
And a master's from an Ivy League school.
So. I went to Wisconsin Big Ten, and I would... So I don't know if I take that as...
I went to Radical Columbia.
I don't know if I don't know. Well, we were a little more radical. We had moms. I don't know if I would accept that as being a qualification or some course that we have to overlook.
I've been an advocate for a long time.
Education matters, Jeff.
Well, yes, it can. It doesn't mean school doesn't, necessarily.
Maybe I should disqualify myself.
Yeah. Thank you, Joyce.
Every lawyer should disqualify himself.
Touché.
We went to trade school.
Response. Okay. Yes, did I. All in favor?
Aye.
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 No opposition. We want to welcome you to as an applicant, and we'll forward that name, and that will be done formally with your application. Another thing on membership, and Mike, I've talked to Chris about this. I've asked that Chris look at all the members and look at what, if any, conflicts there are that with the new statutory requirements, because we're allowed to have two members who are conflicts. So I've asked Chris for every member here, just if you get a call from them, see if there's something. We know that Mr. Moody is probably going to be non-voting, or may not be. And it may be that you will be, will be no conflict. We'll have to have two people with particular conflicts. So Mike, something we talked about that doesn't need a vote, but I think it's appropriate. Anyone have comments on that?
I think with Deborah backing away from the committee, that leaves Lisa and I to fill those two slots. So that would be very helpful.
Yeah, I would think. I may even have a conflict, but not know about it. So
I think the issue is the contracting with access. So if your organization or the capacity of your work is contracted to access, and that's where the issue arises.
And one of the issues is that Lisa, her sub-LLC or whatever with Recovery Innovations may not have, it's international, so may not have any contract with, but I don't know, that's a legal issue. You guys figure that out. That's why I was sent to DOA to ask to deal with the conference.
Right.
Okay. I'll Chris follow up and report out.
Thanks, yeah.
Prior to issuing the appointment letter, so I...
Well,
that's good.
These are done.
These two, yeah.
Yeah, but this is just a review based on the new statute. There's new statute requirements, the members of the public here, that say we now can have two members, voting members, who have a conflict, an inherent conflict.
Voting.
Voting, yeah. So we can have other members who aren't. And if there's no conflict, Mr. Moody then would be the... I believe it should be seniority who's been on the committee. But that's my own thoughts. We're not going to even talk about that. It wouldn't be a vote now. So, thank you for bringing up. Thank you for dealing with Kathy. And I'll tell you, Josh has been very good at bringing up your name, Ms. Rowe, and saying, hey, this has been too long for us to deal with this. And I appreciate Josh's advocacy on your behalf.
I do,
too. And I look forward to working with you.
Thank you.
Good job, Josh. Yeah.
Thank you.
let's talk about updates of various varieties. Do any of you from the committees or different P&Os or whatever you guys call them now have some updates you'd like to give us? I mean, it'd be appreciated. It's nothing formal. If you say no, it's fine. If you have some new CEOs and new clinics you want to be post about or whatever, anything?
So I can speak for Magellan Complete Care.
Yep.
Just one major update is we are almost at 2,200 members as of today. So that's a big step up for us. And we're continuing to roll out an implementation and explore how we can make our plan offer better services to our members and expanding our provider network and continuing to support and advocacy.
Thank you. And are those 2,200 members all SMI or SMI GMH?
So we actually do not serve SMI. We only serve general
mental health subacute,
and the general population who can receive Medicaid. So we're not limited to only...
That's right. So GMH, SH, SA, the children's system.
Yeah, and children as well.
How many total GMH members are there? Do you know?
I do not have that breakdown, but I can look into it.
And all 2,200 primarily, some of them could be children, some could be
children. Yes, some could be children, some can be adults, some are general community, and some are going to be your gyms too. So that's our total number of membership to date. And because they're still rolling in, we haven't fully, we're only on month two, really month one and a half, we haven't started to really break that out yet.
And full disclosure for those who don't know Haley, she's practically grown up and seen the system from every angle, and you're now working on your second master's, is that correct?
Correct.
Congratulations.
There are, it looks like GMH SA non-dual is 120,000 in our area here.
Yeah, so that's a tiny Magellan of the tiny provider, 0.5%.
If I'm reading that correct, that's an access report. So what sound right to you about that 440,000 who are?
I can't speak to that number.
I don't know. So what is Magellan's capacity?
So we currently have a plan with Access and full transparency of growth and development. So as we were the only ACC plan, so we're the only Arizona Complete Care plan that started off with no prior membership. So we started with a number of zero come 10-1. And so it's been a systematic approach and collaboration with Access of building that up as new individuals apply and are approved for Medicaid that's dispersed amongst the different plans. And some formula that I am not educated enough to speak to, so I won't try. And so that's how the members are dispersed. Obviously, because we have the smallest amount, we are getting the bulk of that at this time, as well as other plans are still getting some of those. So that way, we have, and it's also based on member selection. So if a member selects when they apply for access that they want some plan, they will get that plan. And for those who do not priorly select a plan, they're automatically assigned a plan.
Thank you.
Anyone else? You, okay.
UHC has no updates to provide us with time.
Thanks. Thank you. Anyway, okay. Thank you, folks.
I'm with CARE First.
Okay.
My first meeting, so I apologize. I didn't prepare anything.
You don't need to, not at all, ever.
Going forward, what type of updates would the committee find helpful?
You know, since you guys are new to us from October 1, I don't know, I would find it helpful sometimes to be reminded of what you do and maybe, you know, just like we heard, numbers or problems or how we can help you. Like, you know, get a new CEO or something that you think is important, new clinic open up, but that's what I would like for that.
Well, this is brave new territory for all of us. You know, it's the first time this has happened in the nation, and, you know, the SMI population are usually kind of easy to track because they're already assigned to an outpatient clinic. You know those numbers. A lot of times with gyms, so they don't pop up until somebody calls and they ask for help. So I think even hearing census information is good, maybe number of encounters in a month time. You know, we're always interested in, you know, customer service and grievance in the fields kind of things, but, you know, what's working, what are the opportunities. But, you know, kind of our premise is that if we bring individuals, family, and community together, we can make the system run more effectively for everybody. So we want to make sure that it works.
I like to hear problems. I assume everybody's going to get members and grow because there's a demand for this, and it's a new way. So I like to hear problems and opportunities that we can help, if there are any.
Well, it really is an opportunity to put some structures and process in place at the beginning. You know, while there is chaos and confusion, and put something there that works for all of us. Make sure we're all looking at the same things.
Other input?
That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
I think maybe having those under COT, if you have any under court order treatment for any of you folks, even though the GMH, that's usually going to be SMI, but not always, that would be helpful. Because we find that a vulnerable population that can often not get the human rights met because they have some of the rights taken away from them, and in return we have to give them extra care.
But to be perfectly honest, our children's system has always been overlooked. You know, they've always been kind of neglected, and, you know, there was, you know, the child and family team meetings or whatever, but, you know, nobody was really on top of it or looking at it as closely as it needed to be. So, you know, maybe having 70 providers in Maricopa and different people looking at it from across the state, we can put some things in place that are exciting and new and that work for people. Lots of opportunities there we'd like to hear.
And Sherry, who was initial chair of this committee, was very big in children. She had two children.
Transition to adulthood is always a gap.
Well, I can tell you that we have about 185,000 members in both central region and northern region. Right now, I don't have that census broken up by each of the regions, as well as general mental health and substance use health population size. Total population size.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay. Thank you, Matthew. Do you have anything for your?
No. Sierra, September and October are our busiest months, so we're starting to see it calm down. I think we probably broke a record of how many calls we took last month, about 26,000, just for Maricopa County. So, yeah, we're doing really well, and I'm kind of excited for it to be a little bit cooler so we get less calls.
Why is September
for
the busiest month?
After school? Yeah, school is a big part of it, and then...
I would have missed that on a multiple choice test.
And I really think the heat has something to do with it, so those two things in conjunction. But, you know, we're not doing research or anything like that, so those are just our feelings.
There used to be some literature supporting that March and October were the months for highest incidence of mood swings because of seasonal change, so there's clinical literature on that too, so one wonders if that may or may not have an impact. So, Mike, would you be kind enough to let us know what's happening with the director? Was it a new director? Who is it?
Sure. So currently the interim director of ADOA is the chief operations officer for the state. So,
I thought it was the governor.
Yeah. Correct. He works out of the governor's office.
Oh, and I thought the governor was the chief operating officer.
No. No. COO.
So, she's right.
Yeah. So the COO.
Everyone always recognizes that.
Chief Gilbert Davidson. He is. He's currently the interim director of ADOA. It's my understanding that, based upon what I've seen posted online, that we are currently in the process of looking for a new director. I don't at this time have any reason to forecast that would impact any of the members going forward. I know that we presented a letter on Mr. Moody already, and we were waiting for official action from the committee, and that was last left with our HR.
Yeah.
So I think once we carry a few members through the process, we should have it pretty well defined, and I don't want to anticipate any hiccups going forward.
Thanks a lot. Any other questions for ADOA by this committee?
No, I think.
We talked about the brochure. Joy and I noted we're going to give some feedback again, but we're asking the statute to be noted on the brochure that references an IOC, because we want to have that backup when you go to someone who doesn't know who you are. And secondly, maybe even putting on them that there are three different regions.
Okay.
You know,
sure.
I think that would help us up in the northern region, central, whatever. I just, you know, because sometimes we've all encountered where you put a show brochure. Someone doesn't know who you are. You can cite this show brochure, and still they don't know who you are. They don't believe who you are. But so that, so I appreciate you guys' support.
Not a problem.
Let's go on, and we'll move forward here. Let me ask, why don't we take this out of I'm wondering if Mercy Care, if Ms. Pierce-Bird has any issues you want to raise with us or thoughts. You're always so kind to stay on the line.
No, nothing right now.
Okay, well, yeah, we're going to talk. Well, why don't we talk right now about the clinic issues? Why don't we bounce that up to the issue of clinic visit delays, cancellations?
So I've been working through the inquiry that you made, and I just need a little additional time because it requires some coordination with clinics to get information. So I don't have an update today, but I should by the next meeting.
Okay. Was that? Did you send another inquiry? Or?
No, I didn't send another one.
You gave us a good response last time.
Yeah, I think you asked, I wrote down the inquiry that you made at the last meeting regarding the actual clinic policies, and I was trying to follow up on that inquiry, but it's taking some coordination time with the clinic, so I will be giving further update on the policies of the clinic and Mercy Care's position, but I just can't do that today.
Okay, so that's one of the concerns we have, by the way. If you remember, the issue was the walk-in times, and Joy has a phenomenal example of this, which she'll give, but the walk-in times were no other walk-in times, and you get to your appointment by 10 minutes, what do you do then, et cetera, et cetera. It sounds like it's not universal across the different providers and clinics. And that may be...
We haven't gotten responses because we requested each clinic's policies, and we have not been able to get a response from each clinic regarding the policies. And once we do that, I can respond, but I can't even speak to whether or not they're uniform, so I can't see all of them. And if there are clinics that don't have a policy, we will be requiring them to have one after the inquiry is complete. So like I said, it's just not complete yet, and we haven't received responses from all the clinics yet.
Which tells me that it isn't universal, because if it was, you could simply look at your policy and procedures from Mercy Care and say this is what it is, whether they're adhering to it is the next question.
You asked me to outreach the clinic to get their policy, so I can tell you what Mercy Care's policy is. It's in our provider manual. But you asked me to outreach the clinic to get a copy of their policy, and it probably is my fault that we haven't received a response yet back, because it took me a week to relay the information to my team and get the inquiries out. So it's just taking a little bit of time to respond to the clinics regarding their individual policies. But you can look at our provider manual, which is online, and that has information about our expectations for walk-in policies.
Right.
That's just not what clinic that.
I'm sorry. No, I understand the delay in getting from each clinic. Thank you. What is Mercy Care's policy in the manual?
I don't have it in front of me, but I know it's available online, and you can pull it up.
Frankly, I can't pull it up because it's probably 2,000 pages, and I'm going to ask Mike here in DOA. That's a simple question. I'm asking you now, please, to check. You know, everything's like, go online, find it. My God, I spent a half hour today looking for stuff at Access Site, and I couldn't find it. I don't know where to look because it's so bloody torturous, and I can't imagine if you have a serious mental health problem or ADD. So I'm asking why you're here on the phone list, if you'd be kind enough, Ms. Pierce-Bird, to just look it up for us and tell me what it is, please.
I'm looking now, and I've actually spent a lot of time in this manual. My phone has it highlighted. I can't find it.
Yeah, well, then
it's not in the table of contents. There isn't an index, but you can search by walk-in. And it's not there. It is organized very well. It's 123 pages long, and it's very well organized. but it is not searchable easily by common terms.
Let me see.
At least.
Mercy Cares is 400 pages.
So I will include that in the response. When I send my response regarding the inquiry that you made, I will include, you know, what's in the provider manual, which we intended to do anyway. I have not prepared the response to the inquiry because it was fairly consumptive. It required me outreaching each of the clinics, and I have not compiled the response yet.
Okay.
So I will include that in the response.
Okay, that's a formal request from this committee. Now, and Joy has an example that the committee really needs to pay attention to in the public on this issue.
Meryl, I want to know, if Mercy Care has a policy, why is it that the clinics would go off on their own and have their own policies, and they're all different?
The clinics could have a policy that is more restrictive, requires, you know, more than what Mercy Care requires. There could be a variety of reasons why they have their own policy. Plus, they have their own policy to assure that their employees are following their requirements. I mean, there's a variety of reasons, and that's why we're looking at them, to make sure that they're aligned, and that's what you asked us to do.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Can you read the one that the IAD issue on the person had blood pressure?
Oh.
Did they miss her appointment?
Yeah. The one, is that that was the...
That was a separate one.
There was one here. Okay, yeah, one IAD that I have in front of me. A client was going through some serious issues here, and right in the report it says that the provider was notified but declined to assess the client due to them being late for the appointment.
Well, let me read the clinical part that's really critical here in the record here. Member's blood sugar was taken, member assisted to sitting physician after having fallen down. Member then stood up all the way with assistance and went to the restroom. He came out 7 minutes later reporting episodes of emesis. I had been throwing up and passing out since I woke up yesterday afternoon. His blood pressure was 60 over 45, pulse of 80, which is bad. Provider notified but declined to assess member due to member being late for appointment. Member passed out again in the lab, began slipping out of the chair and was lowered to ground, where she had another episode of emesis. EMT was called.
I'd like to know who the provider was, because I think that this complaint, as a provider, if it's a licensed provider, is best handled by a complaint from this committee to the applicable licensing board. Either the medical board, if it's a doctor, the nursing board, the BBHE, if it's a site. I mean, I don't know why they have a counselor singing, but I don't know. I think that that's our appropriate, because clearly, internally, there's nobody there at that clinic who can go and tell the provider, you will see this member who is sick and vomiting and passing out in our lobby. Now that tells me that the clinic isn't going to be responsible for that.
So
we need to then just report it to the licensure board.
Well, let's get the information. I agree.
Is not HIPAA protected.
The IAD number on that, Ms. Pierce-Bird, is 2018-6444. And the provider access, well, I don't see that. Is there any way to identify information on what this is? But it doesn't tell us that's what the IAD, unredacted IAD is, because of being the person you can go by. So we would like a formal response follow-up on that case, please.
So it's 2018-6444, is that it?
Correct.
Yes, thank you. The date on that is?
Well, the clinical team date is 8/23/18.
So about late August 18th, 8/23/18.
The formal response is going to do what for us?
It's going to see if there was any follow-up. We may be able to get records and see. We want to see if there's any recourse or resolution required. This is the IED. We want to see if there's any follow-up.
On its face, isn't it enough for us to file a complaint?
Yes.
This process with the REBA, I've been on the committee, 9 months.
Never.
There's never been any resolution. If we want this committee to be effective, Jack, we need to do things that the reader's going to respond to and the provider's going to course correct. Us just having this conversation doesn't work. But I think we need to file a complaint with the appropriate board. If we don't have the information to do that yet, okay. But some investigation that she'll get to us in 2 weeks is not helpful.
Okay, so that's great. The one concern I have is what they would provide. It was the provider. They call the cardiologist and say he's at the office 20 miles away. That's the concern I have. I don't know.
One question I do have on that IAD, says, you know, provider, I just want to be certain that provider notified but declined to assess, that the provider is the doctor on the site at this point.
That's right.
I just want to know who the provider is. And we can then determine if the provider, it doesn't matter if it's a doctor or nurse or whatever. The fact that a provider clearly is responsible to respond when somebody calls them on this is demonstrated by the fact that they declined.
But I just want to know which provider.
I want to know the provider.
Because they're talking about a cardiologist. I want to be certain that if we do file a complaint, because there's no provider listed. It just says
I just want to know who the provider is.
Yeah, exactly. I want to make sure we're doing the right
thing. Shall we get that in here?
Yes.
So we'd like to get the provider and the location of the provider. We'd like to get a copy of the progress notes for that, the date of the incident as well. Okay? That's a formal request.
So you would like to know the provider, the location of the provider, and progress notes for the day of the incident.
Sure.
Yes, please.
And the date is 8/23/2018.
Well,
it says 0155. That tells me
I know. It's not. So we just gave the incident number. She can look it up by name, etc. Thank you. Thanks. And I think that goes in part to the clinic walk-in stuff. You know, it's silly.
What was the blood pressure? 65 over 40?
60 over 40.
And a pulse of 80?
Yeah, that means the rate that. Because you have
that. Fast pulse.
No, no, you have tachycardia.
Yeah,
it's not any compensatory.
Right.
One go the...
I just found the other, I did find the 409-page manual, and I downloaded it into PDF, and I tried to search. There is no term walk-in appointment in this manual. Okay.
Thank you. Do you want to talk about step-down of SMI individuals at all? We have anything to report, or you were looking at that also. Deb was looking at with you, but she hasn't, obviously.
What do you want to talk about, in what capacity?
Well, the capacity you were looking at. Balancing the ball back, but part of it was the issue was that Ms. Roland brought up, others brought up, that from the hospital, going down to, and part of the issue is that you brought up strongly, is that from the hospital going to an open homeless shelter or someone being long-term at a residential facility, and even though they're not progressing because it's a nature of mental illness versus an acute care facility or SNF. Remember that was a distinction that Access had is it's still nursing facility. If you don't progress in so many days, you get booted out. And using that same criteria for mentally ill was the issue. Is that right, Holly? And
that's the even bigger question that came out of that meeting as well. It was specifically the folks that had transitioned out of the state hospital that were put into these residential settings, usually three or four of them into a group home, and they were, starting to try to apply medical necessity, saying they weren't able to benefit from that level of care and tell them they had to step down and move out. So they weren't really aware of the history or what was established here. But then she also had asserted that all of the housing the supported housing that's supposed to be provided by the REBA is supposed to be that housing first approach, even if it was residential treatment, which we had always considered residential treatment a service and not housing. Did you have any more information on that one?
So what I'm seeing is the system responds well to 75% of the SMI population, but the to people that are very mentally ill, like people that need to go to ASH or are constantly in hospitals and jails, there's no place for them to go because there's no secure treatment. And so they'll go to a residential. But I have three or four cases right now where we're battling with the REBA to get a residential. But we, because that's the highest level of care outside of hospitalization, but we know it's going to fail. And that person, this happened just on Friday. He came out of jail. We had a residential set up. We knew within hours he'd be back on the street psychotic. And that is exactly what happened. There's no place for him to go, and he's now back in jail. Yesterday I had a conversation with the REBA, and this person was non-title, so they have this misconception that you can't provide residential for a non-title person, even though the law says something different. And so we battled for a month to get this person residential. The screener goes out, and the guy said, keep in mind, this guy has a guardianship in place, so he no longer has the ability, the legal ability to make medical decisions. There's a court order in place which ordered him to certain placements. The screener goes out, and he says, well, I don't want to go. And I said, perfect. You're out the door. So they kicked this guy out the door, and it's a, when you think about it, it's a cost containment measure, because the sickest people are going to be the most oppositional. And the REBA, in effect, is saying, even if you have a guardianship in place, the Superior Court says this person can't make treatment decisions, they're still letting them make treatment decisions, and they're kicking them out. I asked the woman, the administrator at the REBA, so where does this person go? And she said, well, there's nowhere for him to go. That's kind of my issue right now. The system works well for most people, but the very, very sick people, we're hanging them out to dry and allowing them to go into other systems or to be homeless. That's a very big problem.
Have you heard anything more about the state's plans for the state hospital property? I know at one point they were doing a private partner, public partner.
So there was
gonna bid.
They're going to do it to the Justice Department.
They were looking for a bid.
Going
something.
To the Justice Department.
Well, the P3 had one response, so it didn't go anywhere. And we have theories on why, but there was only one response. So that died. Now the Justice Department is thinking about using it. There's other groups in town that are touring the facilities in the next few weeks. So I think that's an opportunity to try to build something, but it has to be completely new. There has to be new licensure, there has to be new funding, and so it's not going to happen for a while. But the state hospital is right. All the properties.
What about the 55 bed limit for Maricopa County? Chick said he would consider working with us to adjust that if he was satisfied that they were taking sufficient action towards trying to plug in the other gap. Have you heard anything more on that? Because that really is supposedly the logjam for our whole psychiatric boarding thing.
We're talking about is
supposedly, though, with these folks that need state hospital-level care, but there's no treatment available to them.
It's part of the problem, but I don't see it as a problem. It's not the reason there's a psych boarding problem. That's more MIHS capacity, which is going to be solved with Maryville. So I think the psych boarding stuff takes care of itself.
I think
I see myriads of folks who actually need longer stays and actually would do well with the rehabilitative process of the hospital. You know, a secure unit, that's about mine. You've got to be able to close the door on and lock it, right? Not for 6 months, but then there's only 55 beds. I mean, that's... So I do think it's a problem with some of these folks who are repeat, right?
But tying into psych boarding, that's a different process.
Psych boarding, you mean?
The whole logjam that people are not able to get an inpatient bed when they need one.
But the 55 bed limit is a big problem. But CHIC doesn't make the decision. And so we've seen that as too big of a mountain to climb right now. Unwinding Arm versus Sarn in the settlement. It's just not something that is viable at this point.
Look, I think that the issue is the REBA is supposed to provide housing. Now, there are lots of reasons, and access, there are lots of reasons that I hear they can't provide housing. But, and so,
And they're not responsible for housing. The REBA is not, housing is not a service.
They're responsible for a continuum of care that meets each SMI individual's needs. And when there's a big, we think it's 1,000, 1,200 people who just can't fit into any service. And so a lot of that's going to be residential. We do, housing is different, but having residential available, and that's written in the statute. It's pretty darn clear.
Well, and it's the push that the social determinants, but there's nothing that's been in statute or law that says housing is a covered service. I mean,
but if you look at ARS 36540.01, there's a full continuum of care in there, and it's labeled residential, but a lot of it looks like permanent supportive housing. And so there's a mandate there. But there's all of these cultural things within the system that have kind of been codified into practice, and so we're at a point where the belief is there's no residential unless you meet certain criteria. To me, that's just wrong. So there's a big group of people that cost our culture, our society, lots of money because they're being arrested, criminal justice system, they come out, they go to emergency rooms, they come out, they go through civil commitment, once, twice, three times, they come out, go back to jail. Tons of services are eaten up, and that sick population leads a really traumatic, violent...
And you have the law that says that housing is a service that they're responsible for, because we really then need to add it to the covered service guide to make sure that Access is aware of this.
I did not say that. The 36540.01 talks about a full continuum of care, and within that, they use the word residential over and over and over, that every person in the 25,000 that have been determined to be SMI should fit into one of those services, but they're not available, and then they divide with titled, non-titled, and discriminate on that basis. So there's a subset of people that fall through the cracks. So when the question is, are SMI individuals being stepped down inappropriately? I would say yes, every day. And the REBA in a lot of situations just doing this. Good. You're not voluntary.
Let me give you another specific case example. I have a client who's going to go to prison. He's going to go to prison for two reasons. He went, he's SMI, he's assigned to a clinic. They send a cab to get him. Cab comes, he goes, he walks in, and they said, you don't have an appointment today. And he said, well, yeah, I do, and my cab brought me. He sent the cab to get me. Well, no, that's a mistake. Well, I need to be seen. I don't have any more medicine. I have to be seen. He got excited. Stop raising your voice or we'll call the police. There's nobody here to see you, or rather, it's inconvenient for you to be seen. He's homeless. He couch surfs. They kicked him out under threat of calling the police. He went from couch to couch for a few days, melted down, and got arrested for shoplifting, trying to get something to sell to buy food. And that triggered, when he got arrested, there were two or three other shoplifting arrests. He has felony historical priors. He's been homeless the whole time. We got him into intensive outpatient care, into Valley Hospital, into partial hospital treatment. The court, the judges have been so kind to work with us. We've kept him out and in treatment to get him as healthy as possible because he won't go to prison. And he is now waiting to go do a plea and go to prison. This guy is going to prison for two reasons. He was put out homeless on the street by a clinic who would not see him, and he had to steal to feed himself. He's also going to prison because that's where we send people, because we don't take responsibility for housing. If we say housing is not the responsibility of Access and our SMI system, then I would like for somebody to tell me how we spend $2 billion on 40,000 people in this state. $2 billion and no responsibility for housing? And we think that, do we really think it makes sense that somebody who is SMI, on antipsychotics, no place to live, in court-ordered treatment, but has to go meet people at a Circle K, please tell me that is not the system that we think makes sense. And how the heck do we spend $2 billion on 40,000 people without paying them, without housing? Bottle tonight. I mean, please, somebody tell me this. Who do we pay $2 billion to except landlords?
So what do we, as a committee, what do we do about it?
I think we ask questions.
Of who?
And I had a case manager. I had this guy, a case manager, come to court, and we have it on the record. He's homeless because he's not at the front of the line. There isn't enough housing. We have people, but there are women and children living in cars, and he's a single man, and so we can't. And I said, is there a place that you can house him so this judge cannot sentence him to jail or prison and sentence him to stay in this place and get court order treatment? No, there is not. So he's going to be homeless in the access system. Yes, he will.
Again, what do we... What can we do about it? I see it as a really big problem.
One of the things
number one problem in mind.
We've talked about before is we've got a couple cases, individual cases, and I think this case you're talking about may be one we need to look at about why they didn't talk to the guardian before saying you can go because they have a responsibility to talk to the guardian. That patient number one, so I think that's one. Number two, we've had cases where they are on court order and go to the homeless shelter. We know that's a problem. So I think what we could do, and it would be nice to know when someone's COT, which is a nice population that we know is probably not the neediest, but certainly amongst the neediest because we've taken the rights away. And therefore, the quid pro quo is to treat them. So maybe we can look at what the numbers of COT, and I asked Mercy Care again to give us a list, not to refer me to a page or a document, but to give a list of the deliverable documents, such as we used to get the those in jail, the SMIs in jail, et cetera, et cetera. I need to know what the deliverables are that we can look at. I think we can ask specific questions. How many COT are not going to a level 2 facility? I mean, I think that's something, and that's not hard to capture, I would think. What do you think?
Well, I'm wondering how gyms are handled now, because in the past, somebody that was gentleman or accessories, they went on COT, they took them away from that provider agency and they assigned them to one of four different adult SMI clinics. Are these new ACC plans managing their own COT folks?
Well, I can speak on behalf of UHC. We actually have a court coordinator liaison role, and she follows all our COT COs.
So we can get a copy. That's what we like, is the numbers that I mentioned earlier from you of the CO, those on COT.
Can I get a little clarification on that? Because I know a lot of the P&Os have court liaisons, but they don't actually, they follow the paperwork. That's all they do. The court liaisons just basically make sure that everything's filed correctly from the case manager. So who's covering the people on COT? Are there dedicated teams, or are they interspersed throughout the regular caseloads? Do you know that?
I think each health plan is going to operationalize their court coordinator differently. On UHC, and she's actually following those who are on COT, COE. Sometimes the same members will have a health plan care manager as well. So we're also teaming up and collaborating with the health plan care manager.
Okay, thank you.
I guess I want to bring it a lot more basic.
Okay.
I want to know who we need to ask to come and answer this question. Two questions. How many people who are SMI are homeless in Maricopa County? And why?
We can do that search now.
That's really two really like basic questions that nobody's ever answered. Why? And how many and why? And then the second issue is why, in this specific case that Josh has, I'd like, if he's comfortable identifying with the plan, what is access or the REBA's policy on permitting members with a guardian in place to decline a specific housing or residential treatment assignment, a specific place to live. What's their policy? Who told, who put in place a policy that permits ignoring the guardianship? Now,
I don't think that's going to be a policy issue. That's a legal issue.
She didn't go to court that. And the lady who was doing this, she's following policy.
She probably just made a snap decision, and that's where I look at this as a rights violation. If she looked at a member, if she looked at a person,
she said it's fine.
Dr. Negri made the final decision, and it went from Dr. Negri to Andrea Bell to this woman, Linda Crooms. So it all means, it is the culture. There's no policy. There's absolutely no policy that says it. It's this culture that's been created, that's now codified into the way they do things.
And I don't think we need to talk about a policy because there's a law. The law supersedes the policy. So we're not looking at a policy violation. We're looking at a violation of that person and the guardian's rights.
So that's where our
violation comes. So that, to me, if we're looking at taking an action, it should be on the fact that somebody allowed somebody who does not have the legal right to make a decision, make that decision. That's where we need to, if we file a complaint, that's where we need to go.
That's a good point, because, and I think that there ought to be a policy about that. You would think that when they have a guardian, you must have, because a guardian at that point could, in fact, have maybe said, I want to move to the hospital. Take there, I'll come down. You know, they could say, no, I'm sorry, you have to tell them, they have no choice. Right?
The patient, the ward in that situation, cannot be involuntary. If the guardian said put him in there legally, that person is then voluntary.
I agree.
The decision making authority is taken away.
So
it's just a ridiculous policy to get rid of difficult patients.
Well, my sense is, do they check with, was the guardian checked with? Did this
of course, no.
Oh, and the guardian said, I don't want this person with again. And they ignore that?
Yeah. Well, we can't.
Okay, so can that, to me and you and all of us, is the human rights violation?
Right.
To ignore the person's expressed desire, which is to the guardian, right?
So let me just, doing that service, because I'm confused now. My initial impression was they did not speak to the guardian.
That was mine too.
Because the whole crux of this was the guardian did not give permission, the guardian was not consulted. Was the guardian consulted on this?
The guardian was involved in every decision.
Okay.
See, the guardian said, put him in residential. Residential. We fought for it for a month. Mm-hmm. Then they went out and did a screening. They asked this guy, who's incredibly psychotic and on COT for years because all he does is refuse treatment. And what's he going to say? No, I don't want to do that. Okay, we're done.
Okay, let me ask, because we can't mention the name of this person in the public hearing, I would like to, as a human rights committee, to ask Ms. Pierce-Bird to follow up on to why this person's expressed wishes were ignored.
The guardian.
That's the person, technically. They're one and the same. No, but that's not even the question. They need to learn legally the legal system with guardians. I mean, I've been on the bridge for the last 30 years, and I know the bridge. I'm a forensic shrink for most of you folks who don't know that. So I think this is a very big issue, and I think your comments about it being a way of blowing it off is absolutely wrong. I mean, about wrong with the joint. So, how does this committee want to proceed? Okay. Do you want? I'll be glad to do it if we get permission. Well, we don't need permission, frankly, from the family, but we should get the guardian to proceed.
Yeah, and we can get that.
Okay. I think this is a good example of I like specific examples.
And I really like from REBA the policy. One doesn't exist, so I like that response.
Well, I think there probably is a policy. I think there's either a written policy or a guideline. There's an interoffice memo. Because the decision got made up and down the line of responsible folks,
I know, but that's what I'm saying. It's, when I keep using the phrase, it's culture codified, right? Because it just happened.
Right.
Like now we believe that that you can't court order somebody into a residential. When if you look at the statute, what? It's the first thing listed.
Who said
that? You must, on the order, list an address of the place, where the person's going to stay and who's going to supervise them. But there's this culture that, oh, we can't order to residential. We can't order to act.
Who said that?
Well, this gets if I may, I've been around a long time in the culture. The culture used to be that if someone was on a COT, they could not be re-hospitalized without meeting the criteria for another brand new COT instead of simply not doing so. That was the culture, and all the clinics would never amend to put them in a hospital unless they met the new criteria, and that was the wrong culture. Stu Harmsworth was sued because a culture of I don't have to accept the application. When in fact he had to, the court said that. So the culture is what we have to address, and I agree. I mean, it's pernicious. So we're going to ask Ms. Pierce Bird to let us know what Mercy Care's policy is in dealing with guardianships and the interface between provider network organizations and the guardian.
And what amounts to healthcare decisions by award.
Right.
I mean, someone who the Superior Court has said can no longer make healthcare decisions.
I think we need to be really clear. I think what the committee is asking is.
Is there any way that this can be, this one's a little bit tricky for me to follow. Is there any way that you guys can put this one in writing? It
will
help me a lot.
Yes, we will.
Thank you.
Paul, do you want to?
I still would like just to know how many SMI are homeless.
That's a separate question. So I'd like to ask, this is easy, how many SMI are homeless? And I know on the special assistance spreadsheet, it's a separate, you can just sort by homeless. But we're going to get the spreadsheet again.
But I'd really like to know
why.
And I don't know, maybe the new director of access or interim director,
Back to your point, what can we do? You know, I think if there's an issue, we know housing is a problem. It's a social determinant. Everybody's looking that way. Maybe we can help guide that conversation and frame it. You know, and even if the 55 beds limit, you know, we don't have to do another lawsuit. We've got enough people at the table working together that we can come up with some sensible solutions. But I think we should help.
I don't think that
step and decide what we need. You know, let's not just bitch and moan. What exactly do
we
need?
I'm not bitching and moaning. I want to know why. I can't help them if I don't know why. If I make a cake and it falls, I need to know why. I say, okay, did I take it out when it was too hot? Did I not let it cool? I mean, I don't know why.
In the first point, we
other than not enough housing, that's on me.
The first thing we do is there was a good article, there was a good review today on vets being homeless and some of how they choose. It was on NPR yesterday in Arizona. But we were going to ask a question of how many are SMI are homeless.
And why?
Why, I'm not going to ask yet. The chair is not going to answer. Because the why is like, that's if they get sociologists. Look at the numbers.
It won't take a sociologist. It'll be money, no housing. They don't qualify for I don't know.
You know it's money, no housing, don't qualify.
No, I don't know that. I'm just rattling off things I hear people, experts say. But I never get the answer.
Well, and Josh alluded to it. You know, it's... The system has never identified housing as a service. Residential treatment is a treatment, a service. Housing is not a service. Supported housing is a service.
Yeah. What statute was that? 365.
Which one?
The one about
residential.
536-5401. Okay.
Point 01,
right. Moving on to the IAD reviews. We've touched on that with a couple, and Joy, I really appreciate you having perused those. Does anyone have any issues on IAD reviews?
Oh, you know, I was the one that had homework. I didn't really work very diligently on my homework. I was supposed to kind of look at it and identify some of the challenges, and I did that. And I don't know if anybody is open to helping the portal work more efficiently. You know, the challenge is trying to toggle it. You know, I'd like to be able to take that information and put it into an Excel spreadsheet. You know, I was I found, you know, that I could actually identify, you know, the number of death reports for the month. And I looked at the period September 1st, no, actually, I screwed up and got into October somehow, but I was going to look at September. But I looked at October 1st to October 31st. And when I choose death reports, it'd be nice to have a tally, you know, so I would say, you know, you're looking at 23 records, because there's nothing that tells you, or, you know, how many reports for that period I'm looking at. So I had to go and write them all down and then kind of count, and okay, it looks like there's 23 of them, you know, and then, but then I wanted to know, okay, 23 death reports out of how many total reports, so I have to pull up all those reports and then count. So if there was a way to get a tally that says, you know, we're looking at 23 out of 100 records or something, if there was an easy way to kind of export it into an Excel spreadsheet, you know, then we could sort it and tally, because the cover sheet is almost okay. You know, I could almost get the information I need without opening the PDF file if they would add to it. You know, you know, where they list that, okay, this is the reason for the report, this is the report number, this is the report date, this is the, you know, they identify whether it's SMI or substance abuse or child, which is helpful. It would be nice to know if it was Title 19 or non-19, you know, if they would add COT flag right on that front stage that extends their own COT, and then age and sex. And then I would have all the information I need to be able to kind of do it. And what I'm mostly interested in, you know, we've been supposedly going to integrated care because folks have been on this diet 32 years earlier than everybody else. So I want to see if people are starting to live longer. So if I look at the death reports, I can get a feel, you know, whether we're changing that curve at all. So that's why I'm interested in that primarily. And then we also want to, you know, and then I'll look at the other categories, but I've got to be able to sort through this first. So that's where I'm at on the IEDs. And I still promise to give you a tally. That was September, right?
Yeah.
And she was supposed to, Merle was supposed to respond to the one that we gave her last, at the last meeting. Did you get an answer for that one, Merle, or not?
I was supposed to get an email with the numbers. I didn't ever get anything.
No, I gave you
so
the number.
So there's no number for me to look up.
No, I gave you the number right at the time. I didn't know I was supposed to give you an email.
At the meeting, I asked for you, because you were asking about three different IEDs, and I asked for an email with the IED number so that I could look into them, and I never received them.
Good. Joy, you have a couple. Okay, we will send you the numbers. Mike, DOA was looking at some issues regarding the database as well. And are you able to get access to the database?
I do not currently have access to it.
So is DOA going to get access, do you know, so we can say what issues we had?
I've requested access to the system.
Okay. Joy, do you have any...
Multiple times.
Multiple times?
Yeah.
Oh, gee, welcome. Joy, do you have any... You were also to report on the IED. Vowels
right.
Today. Do you have any that you want? You brought one up that Merle and Ms. Pierce-Bird has a number of. Do you have any others that you wish to have follow up or the committee should be aware of? And then we'll have Ms. Diesel with her concern or question. You have one from 2017, I remember.
Oh, that one. Okay, yes. But that was on the quality of care report, and I picked it up, and on that quality of care...
Do you want to give the number so Ms. Pierce-Bird can have the... look it up, maybe?
It's IAD 2017-4087. And this person was on COT, and there were so many issues going on with this one, and I guess because of the group home, they were not receiving medication for a number of weeks, and the phone was out of order for a couple of weeks, but their phone number changed. I mean, it was just lack of working phone, and the group's home to conduct annual assessment interview got recording, but did not leave any message. the concern was that the person's room was very warm. The house was not using AC. I guess the biggest concern here was that the person was not receiving the medication for a length of time here. And anyway, the quality management, you know, did follow up on it, but my concern here on this particular home, what was the outcome of the home? What happened? What is the status of that home right now? Because it seems to me that there are a lot of violations on this.
Just so members and can they pass it around, this person has been on COT for weeks, if not months, did not get medications. Had minimal follow-up. Phone wasn't working yet.
So he wasn't on COT.
Oh, yeah. Right. He was on COT, but not getting it. His rights were expired. So we'd like a fuller report on that case. And the home identified, do they have the location identified? No, we'd like to know the specific location of that residential treatment program, so we may wish to do a site visit on that.
Can you repeat the report number?
The report number is up on the top.
Yeah, 2017-4087. And this is the resolution. This is a resolution report. And Holly, you have some issues.
Well, I have a couple, but the first one on this report is it. I don't understand how somebody's on court-ordered treatment, which means a judge, you know, sitting down on a bench for the road, signs an order and tells people to do something. And not only does the person not get the treatment, but the person who's ordered to give the treatment never seems to do anything about it. So I'd like to know who was ordered to provide court-ordered treatment and did not do that. So I guess, Morrell, I'm asking, we need to know about the housing, what happened there, but also who was ordered to provide this court-ordered treatment and did not do that. Who's the provider? Who's the treatment team?
It tells you in here.
So that's the next question. But my broader issue is it seems that Joy is able to make the portal work.
No, we make. I think we can get in on the IAD.
I made a mess.
Right?
Yeah, I made a mess.
Yeah,
okay, good. Okay, good. Because I've got portal paralysis.
Do you have anything else, Ms. Green, on the IAD? Okay, IAD.
I guess I have to give her the IAD, but I have a concern. She's okay. Waiting for that.
So. And just so, this provider information is Southwest Network.
Right. Okay.
So
we need to do that. Is that clear? About what we're requesting is simply the resolution report does not. We want to know the exact location of that, and if there's been any follow up with that location. And we also want to. Do you want anything else from that?
And
the status of the patient, whether or not they had been recommitted, were hospitalized, were jailed, or anything. Just to send the data of the IAD if the patient has had any other dire consequences, secondary, or whatever.
I just want to read this into the record because I think it's, at some point, if we put this in a capsule and we go forward in time, 20 years, hopefully people will be astonished that this ever happened, and there's some, okay? It says, instant IAD report was submitted on 6/18/17 regarding member incident on 5/22/17. Member was not taking her medication as ordered. Her prescriptions were not picked up by her residential placement since 12/31/16.
5 months.
So this is a blank with most current behavioral health diagnosis of schizophrenia and unspecified psychosis. So we have an unmedicated person with schizophrenia and unspecified psychosis. The member is a recipient of Title 19, determined to be SMI. And this is what just drives me crazy. She is receiving supportive level of care from the SMI clinic, which is Southwest. How can you provide 6 months of supportive levels of care and not know that the person you're providing the care to is hasn't had their medicine for 6 months and is therefore a non-medicated person with schizophrenia and psychosis? How do we have a system that is content to provide quote-unquote supportive level of care, I don't even know what that means, and doesn't know that the person went for 6 months with no medicine?
That's an important point for the record that we might be able to follow up. But one of the important things that did come out of our lawsuit is we used to have a case management plan, and you had levels of care, and you had assigned case managers. So a supportive person would be assigned to a case manager with a case load of no more than 30 to 1, and they are required to see that person at least face-to-face once every 30 days and a home visit every 90 days, and they should be seeing a doctor at least once every 30 days. So we don't necessarily have those parameters firmly entrenched, but it's a good thing to look at.
And I'm counting here, they go on and they chart, this member was seen by all sorts of people, and now it's 7, 8, 9, 5, 18, 10, met with member CM, case manager, on 5, 18, 17. So this person gets services, supportive care, people go out and engage, quote unquote, all these verbs that are, you know, cool. And nobody knows that the patient doesn't have a medicine. This is...
Thank goodness we don't know those. Let's see if they...
Let us put it in a time capsule and hope that in 20 years people are surprised.
No. Our job is to do something about
that. I agree.
Exactly. We can't just read this stuff into the record and not do anything.
I agree.
So what do we do about that? Every time we have something like this,
right.
We need to file a medical we need to have them come in here and explain it. We need to do something. Otherwise, they're not going to adjust. And this committee is pointless. We need to do something on every single one of these.
How can you see somebody six months and not know they're taking that is the quality management, and they did a follow-up on it, but what concerns me is they just educate the staff. I mean, I think more should be done.
Educate the staff?
That's what the resolution was.
So what? When you have somebody on meds and court-ordered treatment, you should go pick them up at Walgreens and give it to them?
So,
you got to educate them to that. They're
so
not
what do we do about
them.
This person? I mean, this was, what, a year?
Here's what I would like. One of the questions is, how many of the COT, we talked about this, are going to shelters and not level 2 facility, i.e. a residential program? Can you get us that information, Ms. Pierce-Kerr? Is it tracked? How many of the patients?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, please?
How many patients who leave the hospital from a level 1 facility go under COT, go either homeless or to a non-level 2 or non-residential treatment program? Is that tracked?
That's not a question that I can answer. I can look into it, but I'm not. Know the answer to that question.
I think that's what we'd like to look at, because we know of examples of people, number one, who are going to a lower level of care than they have acquired, which means from hospital to the streets or whatever, like we just had, you know, number one. So that's, I think that gets at that. If we're not tracking it, then maybe we need to start saying you're going to track it. We need to look at indices. I think this committee can recommend indices.
So
we brought that up with RS. Remember, he was without water for months, and he was on COT.
So I guess what I'd like to know on this specific IR, which is 2017-4087, I'd like to know which clinic, who the director is, and who the assigned provider was to this member. And then if you can get us that, we can invite one or all of those people to the next meeting to talk about this. We just know it's Southwest.
Yeah,
so that's what I'd like to know, and we can invite them along with Townsend.
Okay, so there have been a lot of requests on this particular IAB, what I wrote down was resolution report, location, and provider. You want to know what follow-up was done with the facility, the status of the patient since the IAB.
Yes.
Is there something that I'm missing?
Or director of the clinic. I want to know who was the director of this clinic. Who was responsible for this clinic?
We don't need the resolution report. We have that. We have the resolution report. One of the problems we're having is we still want to, the committee objects to receiving these fully redacted reports because we have signed confidentiality agreements. We have a right to have these. And just objecting that, I think the committee is going to back that because, and hopefully DOA is going to do something about that. The next point.
One more quick point.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think any time we have an incident report, we need to actually follow up. This committee is pointless if we don't. I mean, the point of this committee is to try to oversight and try to get the 50-foot adjustments not doing right. And so anyone that we bring in that is this egregious, we need to have some steps implemented to get some correction or just some information.
Should we ask for the documents? Because there's corrective action plans identified, restrained, or things, there's actions that they've taken per their investigation. Did we ask for a copy of that we could see that this clinic conducted this training in this state?
Can we add that to the list of things we want for this one?
Yep.
Mario?
And I agree with that.
You want to see the corrective action? Is that what you said?
Yeah, because we sure don't need to reinvent the wheel if they've done things to correct it. It's not an ongoing issue.
Okay, so I just want to be clear that I have everything that you want down. You want the location and name of the residential. You want to see what follow-up was what was done with the residential facility. You want to know the status of the patient since the incident accident, if there were any consequences to him for the lack of treatment. You want to know the director of the clinic providing services to the member, and you want to see any corrective action plans. Is that correct?
And the name of the residential facility, yes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Good list.
All right.
You got it. I do my best.
Okay. No, I know. Yeah, I appreciate you being
good notes there.
Yeah. Let me, so here's a problem we have with the IADs, and I like DOA to note this. We have to print. I listed all the November IADs. There were maybe five so far in the date search. So I printed one, and on the form on what I printed, it does not give me any information to relay to you. Separate. I cannot find the IAD number or any reference number I can tell you about when I printed it. Now I think there was one when I clicked on the file, but when I printed it, there's nothing there to identify this.
Somebody suppressed that.
I'm just like, how can I get further information?
I have to mark it down.
Joy has to mark it down. This doesn't make any sense.
I'll take the copies with me.
Yeah.
And that's why I make my list and write
things. But that doesn't matter. I don't want that.
No, it's a lot of work.
So we have one.
It's going to be an error, too. You're going to miss training.
Yeah, and I have one here that this. I don't know the number. It happened on 1031, so it's 1-4-5 there now on 313 East Loletta, where so-and-so was called AWOL. They were missing more than 24 hours. Police reports were done. And then the patient, quote, made an attempt to return to the program on 11-4 at 7:30 a.m. and was asked to go to CBI before he could return due to his presentation. He reported he would just leave, so he packed up and left. So we have a patient who they call AWOL on, who goes back to the residential facility, and then is told, whoops, we don't want to see you, go to CBI and get cleared first.
How is he supposed to get to
CBI? I don't know. But...
yeah, but, I mean, TBD, psychotic...
But you know what? Then you take him, then you do it. Look, but I can't identify this on the IED. There's a form. I'll get to you. I'll get you the number on that one, because I'm concerned. I want to know what they did at the facility. If they were concerned about to provide transportation and ensure that he would come back to us and being homeless instead of kicking him out. And what we heard from a recent site visit was after 3 days, they kick him out. They terminate him, right, Joy? It was 3 days,
yeah.
They don't show up, but this was 4 days. And they say, well, your bed's gone. So that's, we'll talk about that later. I mean, that's an issue I think we all should be sure.
Well, they're actually discharged.
Yeah, they're discharged.
Unauthorized absence from a licensed facility.
Right, right. So anyway, let's move on. So we do have some problems with data, and DOA is aware of that and getting it. We still would like to get the unredacted because this is confidential.
So the thing there is if you're going to request information, then it needs to be expressly stated. So that's we just need to submit a letter with what the rationale is for requesting the additional information.
Okay.
Okay.
How about two other things? What about do we have some coordination? Let's talk about housing update on Mr. Cummings.
I sent belatedly when we talked about, you saw a copy of the letter I sent to Ms. Pierce Bird. You see the letter, a copy of it. So that's what we've done on this case at this point. We'll wait for a response. It's been delayed. In the meantime, Mr. Cummings is continuing to fight the bureaucracy to get some residents. We shall see. And then, do any of you have MHA or NAMI have a coordination updates to us?
Our big thing, just as our annual meeting coming up January 26th of next year, our theme is caring means sharing, and we're just trying to feature community and grow and strengthen and work across the state.
Where is it going to be?
Ability 360.
Okay. Where?
Ability 360, 5025 East Washington. The old deck building.
What day is it, Jim?
It's Saturday, January 26th.
Is it open to the public?
It is. And you know, we recognize that, you know, 11 affiliates across the state, they don't all think alike. You know, some of them are really difficult to work with. And we want them to be able to, you know, highlight what's going on in their communities, hopefully featuring, you know, the partnerships that they're building with the new providers and stuff. But, you know, we've been pushing that, you know, individual and family involvement in all aspects of system design, development, and oversight will make the difference. And, you know, now that we're seeing that in these contracts, we've got to do everything we can to make sure that it works as well. This is our hypothesis. We want it to work. Mm-hmm. Good.
I would say that NAMI chapters was at the presentation of the East Valley, and they bought a whole table, and they were all there. And
she was at our walk just the weekend before, I think. And, yeah, and there's so many ways to partner. You know, we don't have to agree on everything. You know, let's focus where we intersect and do the best we can together.
And I was really impressed, and I know that the police, there were police officers there, whole table of law enforcement from Mesa, Gilbert, Chandler, Phoenix. And when they read off the names of the different groups, I could tell all the officers were looking, and they took note of the fact that there was a NAMI table. I thought it was interesting. I was sitting between the two tables, so I thought it was interesting.
Can you give an update of the committee, of that meeting you were at?
Oh, this was a different meeting.
The other one you were at.
Yeah, the Arizona Town Hall, people may be familiar with that organization. Their 2018 town hall was on Arizona's criminal justice system, and so I went as as a lawyer, criminal lawyer. But a lot of the day was spent on the panels talking about mental illness in the criminal justice system and ideas about improvements. And it was very, I just thought it was interesting that it was one of the questions that we were asked to talk about, and it led to a lot of good discussion, so I thought that was good. And the Department of Corrections was very well represented. Karen Heldman was in my panel, and she was wonderfully engaged. So it was a good town hall, and the final report, as drafted, does have fair amount of stuff in it. Stuff. It's like a 15-year-old.
Well, good stuff. Awesome.
You know, like a lot of paragraphs.
Can you get us a copy?
It will be out. Yes, mm-hmm. And I can. I will Xerox copy. I've got to call and see. They did a very nice little thin, but, you know, 25-page spiral-bound book on research from the Goldwater Institute and other places on the criminal justice system, changes in crime statistics, changes in... our crime rates have been going down. Violent, nonviolent, property crime, and our incarceration rates have been going up. And we are now the third or fifth, we're right third or fifth in the country with incarceration rates, although we have very low crime rates, and one of the longest sentencing rates in the country. So it's a really good summary. I've emailed to say, may I copy that and distribute it? I don't want to copy it if it's, I mean, they weren't selling it, but I just want to ask. So if I can, I will make everybody copies and I'll bring a bunch to the next HRC. It's the best little synopsis of criminal justice statistics that I've seen.
There is a good website too. NIJ has a good website, as you know. And the president, I think, supported, and both parties supported the change in the federal laws. It was something you said, federal sentencing, a more rehabilitative process in the federal system. Josh, you have a nominee, a nomination from MHA, I'm sorry. Any thoughts?
No, not really.
site visit. We went on, Joy and I went on a site, a couple site visits. What do you want to tell about the one was Foundation for Senior Living run? Okay, what was that? You've got a...
I think both of them were good reports. I mean, I felt really good about both of them. I mean,
good. Yeah, two sites. Both were females, if I recollect. Both were exceptions. They were laid out by the arena, the Phoenix Arena, University of Phoenix, whatever it's called now.
And they had good programs that offered them, kept them active.
Yeah, Way West.
Yeah.
And they're both very clean. One was Foundation for Senior Living, which we universally, I think, and those is have had good shops and good programs and good facilities. And one of them had their own van they would transport people to also. The other one did.
Right.
Was an organization which we weren't familiar, right?
I wasn't familiar with
it. Do you remember the name of the organization? The housing organization? I don't have the...
This is your report.
Yeah. Remember?
I didn't.
I've got somewhere else. Anyway, so we went to two sites. It was good. It was pleased. One of the concerns I still had was that the programming is happening on site because of the change to access and the billing. Remember, they used to go from the clinics and the patients would go to the clinics to do the groups. Well, since these are residential programs, the programs have to do the groups. The clinics are not doing as many groups because they're not getting reimbursed, and so it's hard to transition people to the community when you keep them in home and doing everything there instead of saying, hey, go to the clinic and take buses and do other things. So that was a problem, but we're not going to solve that in my lifetime. But we saw no human rights violations, and we're pleased that the patients were pretty pleased too. And they didn't see any problems with step down prematurely either. In that regard, since the last few months, the spreadsheet, Ms. Pierce Bird, that we received, the Excel database, has the format we received it has changed. It's now a read-only format. And I don't have the skills to do what you could do before. I used to sort by zip code when you sent it to me, and now I can't do that. Joy was able to do that, but with some machinations. Can you please check to see, for example, the difference in the January report we received and the July report? One was in one format where I could then search by zip code, and we could then look at the locations, et cetera. And the other was you couldn't do anything with it at all. So what I'd like to do is...
So you receive that from Access, right?
Yes. Yeah,
or
right.
Did it come directly from her?
I think it's directly from Access, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, so I should go to Access and ask them? Is that what...
I think so. Okay. I mean, I'm not familiar with what's different about the spreadsheet. I'm sorry.
I will do that.
But But what I'd like to mention is even though I was able to do it, I had to copy that spreadsheet. And then it told me I still couldn't do it because the cells were merged. So I had to unmerge the cells in order to sort by the column that we needed.
Yeah, and we'll talk to access.
Honestly, that's just common Excel stuff. In order to in order to have titles on things, you have to merge certain cells. There's not really, not to be the harbinger here, but that's an Excel problem. I can work Excel very well. Send it to me, and I'll get
but
it.
The problem is, in January, we received it. Well, we could do it. They have the titles. They say sort by zip code, sort by address, sort by first name. And now they're just, how do you want to sort? It says cell 1, cell 2, or you know, line 1, column 1, column 2, column 3. But I don't want to have to go to you and wait for us to do it.
But it might be an easy solution.
Well, we've had a test to do it. Okay. Because they were doing it in January. Mm. And then July, it was not. I'm just saying.
Something changed.
Something changed. And if necessary, we'll send them all together.
And it honestly could be that they're using Windows 10 instead of Windows 7.
Really?
And now that they're different, they're different versions.
Okay.
I mean, there's a thousand reasons why.
Okay. We'll ask them if they can. But it's not a big deal. I'll just call you guys up.
We could always
mention. Okay. They think it's not. But it does help. I mean, I haven't been able to
sort.
Right. I will. I'll contact her. Does the public have any? The public have any thoughts or questions? And this has got to be bloody boring for you.
So, our two new members, we're going to wait for the appointment letter.
We have. It's on the director's desk as we speak. Correct. Any other comments at all? Okay. Meeting eight times. This was 3 weeks from our last meeting because of next week being Thanksgiving. So it's been a short time. When do you want to meet again?
It's supposed to be on the third Wednesday. If it is, it's the 19th.
I do have a conflict on the 19th.
And I'll note that Lisa is in New Zealand and she has an excused absence.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with skipping a month.
No. I hate to say these words. Annual report.
Oh, yes.
We are required by statute, and we have been told repeatedly by the chair of the Senate Health Committee and the chair of the House Health Committee that if they get our report in January, it's almost too late. Did we even do a report last year?
That's when Scott left us. We voted that we were going to move it forward.
But Lisa was going to have it, and she stepped and did it.
But I don't think it ever got distributed.
I believe it did. I believe that one did.
It was.
It was distributed quite late, I believe.
It was.
It was like in April of May.
That was just as I started coming aboard, but it was completely.
We voted on that.
Lisa did pretty much all of that. We added a few blurbs here and there.
So I really think we need an annual report out of this committee in December. It's one of the few things that the statute says we must do.
When does the statute say to do?
It doesn't say.
We didn't do it annually, so.
We need to make sure we highlight our housing conversation and that issue and try to push that issue forward.
Who wants to do work on that?
Well, when is December?
I thought it was Melton Delta. She brought it up kind of a thing.
When's the in December meeting? I mean, I'm
that's what we're trying to schedule.
Well, December, it would normally, as was well pointed out by Jim, it would be the 19th, as Joy pointed out, for a third Wednesday of the month. However, with enough those, we can change this.
And when we got Lisa to finally do it last year, nobody did anything until she drafted something and actually started moving around.
What you have to do is draft something that people will not like. Then you get tons of comments. If you want to get it done, write something that's outrageous, and then everybody will start going,
for the record, this is not indicative of how we like to work. I just want to say that.
It is indicative of exactly how we work.
I didn't say how we did it, how we like to do it. I don't mind making this. I don't mind taking it this year. She did it last year. We shouldn't put it up there again.
Well, that's why you wanted to be the secretary.
That is not why I was the secretary. I opened my mouth and you elected me as what happened up there. But yeah, I'll be glad to get it started, and then we can filter it around.
So you're thinking that we should have a target date? Because we had target dates last year.
Well, we need to vote it. We need to vote up or down with agreed upon revisions and a final and a vote on to accept it with those revisions at the December meeting and get it out.
Yeah, let's meet in December. Okay. Everyone else can make it, including hopefully you folks will meet you on that December.
So that's why Jim can't come.
I know.
But I'm willing to do a different day if you want to.
Why can't we do Thursday?
Okay.
I don't care. Thursday the 22nd. Oh, I'm going to get this one.
Okay.
20th. I could do that.
Is that people amenable to that, the 20th at this time?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I am trying to move a trial from the first week in December to the week before Christmas, because I want a Christmas verdict to people. Jurors are nicer to plaintiffs at Christmas time. So I'm trying to get it.
Can we get this room that day?
We can get a room.
We'll get a room.
Good.
So we'll do this on 20th at the same time, same location, at 5:15.
The other thing I wanted to mention is I think it could be important if we try to host another community forum in 2019. It's been 3 or 4 years. We had probably 50 people, the one we hosted. I don't think this is the place to do it because it's too hard, Realm or somewhere. But I think to do that and have it be meaningful, it would be useful to try to do it early in the year while the legislature is in session. Maybe February, March.
I mean, with the community, what do you guys think?
And Joy was so incredible, the one who really got people there before.
Do you think it was helpful?
Oh, yeah. It really helped some of the bar talk, too. I mean,
Was it a freestanding event, or did you do it in concert with something else that was going on?
It was at the Wren Building.
Yeah.
It was nice, and one of the organizations donated some food.
And I think this is uniquely important. We have a new Speaker of the House in Arizona for the first time in, I don't know, a while. Four years or so. There's a new speaker. It's been an election year. I think it's a wonderful opportunity to invite folks in public policy positions and educate some, offer some information. Maybe NAMI could help some of the chapters. I don't know.
I would suggest it be like on a weekday, maybe starting at 4 or whatnot. What do you guys think?
I think you could, and we can, throw in food. That always helps get people there.
Should we just pick a day? What do you think?
Probably needs a little bit of planning coordination, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But are you willing to lay a little subcommittee?
Well, I'm happy to participate in a committee. At this point, I'm in trial. If all this stuff goes, most of the first quarter of 2019, it's crazy. But I can participate at night if there's something.
So things in February.
And who's the targeted audience?
Consumers.
Well, Jim, they sent that out. They sent out how many organizations NAMI did too, once they got it. So that's why it really went out to everyone.
So maybe March. I just tossed it out. I
think February for the sessions. I would say February, mid-February would be better. Well, let me play with the data, Ren. What do you guys think? When was the last time? I mean, middle of the week is okay. Is it usual?
And I will be happy to underwrite food refreshments.
I'm not worried about that. So
when do you think? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday?
I think what we have to do, if you're going to have someone from the legislature comes, you'll have to see when they're available. That's how I did it the last time. And if you pick a month, then I can contact whoever you want to invite and ask them, you know, what's the best.
This is February. Senator Barto sent her equivalent in the. She's in the House now. Is she going to be chair of the committee to help? And then we can see if Kate Brophy McGee might be available.
Okay, in February.
I think she got elected out.
Oh, did she? Did she beat out? What's her name?
Oh, she was tight. And then, what was how? You know, and if you, we'll let the organizations know too. And this, the goal of this is just that consumers come, talk about rights issues.
Where are they going to, yeah, we had some structured questions.
We had questions. We also had them submit questions.
Yeah.
But one of the concerns they have with the website, Mike, is the Access website isn't really that very good in identifying, you know, it sort of directs you to IOC, and I couldn't, it was really hard for me to find out who are the committee members, the numbers or emails. I'm hearing that, so I didn't see that.
It's a wildcat secret.
Yeah, I couldn't find that. You know, it says...
Where?
Yeah, so... Yeah. I'm sorry, Kathy, what were you saying?
No, I just said blanketed and secrecy.
Yeah, well, so it really is. I mean, if you look at it, it's kind of hard to get that. And Access simply says this, and I think... They need to say, it says independent oversight committee. It doesn't say, and they need to say on the thing, formerly Human Rights Committee. So I it doesn't. So I was looking at that stuff. So could you just track it yourself? Like, just play with it and see?
So,
on the Access site, it doesn't say. It says IOC, the law changed August, whatever. And that's just your link to
you. I know we have a... up on the ADOAs, and we can change that. As far as the member profiles... that's something we can put on there, and I don't mind maintaining it. It's my understanding that it hasn't been part of the regular administrative processes of the committees, even across the state, to have member updates. So member name, employer, or professional status and position on the committee. And so if we want to start including that, that's fine. I just need you to clarify to what extent.
Well, my sense is I think you should, it would be good, I feel okay listing my email and name. Does all the committee feel okay about doing that?
Sure.
I don't know.
You can't possibly get any more junk. I mean, you have to filter your junk mail all the time and put tight filters.
But does that make sense if you want to
do
that?
Well, it is the goal, because I thought we always tried to channel communication through the chairman.
Okay, then, you know, what you can do is at least identify the members.
You got
the names of the members.
Yes, sir.
Let's do that to start with. How about just the names of the members?
Would it make sense for the IOC to have its own email?
Yes.
Just one email that we can lift up there
that we would not use for one another, but
the public could email that. It'd be like... somewhere where we could check, or maybe Jack could check and then filter it to us to handle it, whatever. But
no, that's a great question to have.
It already exists.
Does it?
It's IOC@azdoa.gov.
I saw that. So every IOC.
Correct. And any email that goes to that it creates a ticket, so we can cover response time. So then if the committee had a request of ADOA, you know, X complaint was received on this date to the email, we want to know what the response time was or how quickly it was escalated to the committee, we could report out on it.
Perfect. Would you want to do an IOC.central.northern.south? You know?
Think about it.
That answers your question, doesn't it?
I can tell you, I don't have a problem creating them. It becomes logistically challenging to manage multiple accounts. And that's why we had it in one. But it is a fair point. We haven't been getting a lot of emails.
Right.
Yeah.
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 As long as you can figure out where it goes to.
But it does exist. The email is published on the website. In the event that somebody reaches out, there's multiple people from both Chris and I are on it, and it creates a ticket for us.
And if you would... We'll look at the website. I think we need our own website,
not buried within, you you know, and we can talk about that. But the other final thing is, and I think these two are statewide meetings. We haven't had a statewide meeting in, since you've been a member.
Last year, yes.
2 years?
We didn't go last year.
Well, we didn't have one last year.
Is that the one that Scott organized?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one that Scott organized.
That was the year before.
Last year.
I think we need another, and I really think we need to do what you've been talking about several times, is to talk about what's the strategy of these committees? How are we going to, what are we addressing?
I'd like to informally talk about that after we adjourn. Just we could, we talk now if you want.
I don't think we can informally.
Okay. Well, we're going to take action on it. But does the public have any comments? Well, then, I want to, you may. Okay, well, we'll talk now. I'd like to talk about what we can do on these, how we take action on this, because we've tried, we've come up against walls with access in the past. We've tried to do stuff. But I think asking questions or asking is important. But how we each envision, and this is like, you know,
stick around if you want.
Crossing around anytime. But you know, how do you envision doing what you're saying, Judge? Because I think it's really important. In other words, the site visits I think are very valuable because we can take specific action, see things happen. But you know, when we have these things like the COTs going to homeless shelters, you know, or I think this ward case is a good one, or the guardianship, what is a policy? Or the walk-in clinic issue is a very good one. And we did take some action on the jails, people getting arrested at the urgent care centers. I mean, we've done things. I mean, I think you kind of dismiss it quickly. And in fact, we have done social change here. But, you know, and we may not be tracking this efficiently, but we have had some. And this issue of the walk-ins is you brought up here. Let's see action. Ms. Pierce Bird is doing that. And the jail.
Okay, so that, what is she going to do?
Well, she's checking with all the clinics and what the policy is. Then we're going to get some information and say, hey, you know, let's post the bloody walk-in policy on the windows for where the open times are.
I think I know what you're talking about, Josh. I do.
Yeah.
Well, what it boils down to is that we get a major complaint from wherever it comes. If it comes from the crowd or if it comes from something we've discovered, and then we get more information, and then we ask some people to look into it, and then we... Don't we have the authority to actually act?
Sure.
So if we have enough information or we feel like we can act, in certain respects,
I think we have the authority.
We can go shut the place down. But, I mean, if we have the authority to write a letter or to escalate a complaint or something like that, I think that we should begin doing that a little more frequently with a little more, you know,
we have the authority to write a letter. We have the authority to write a letter to the entity that we've looked at. We have the authority to distribute that letter, including to the media, and do press releases.
And
information releases are called now.
I do get what you're saying. I mean, it does feel slightly, for lack of a more appropriate term, slightly impotent that when we get these major complaints, we send them to, and you know, we send them to Mercy Care. Well, if that's what's going to happen, then we don't need to be here because the person who complained can just go straight to Mercy Care. So what are we doing alongside and in conjunction with Mercy Care, Access, the ACC plans? How are we conducting these investigations on an independent oversight committee basis that supports that or that we're allowing them to support us? Is that kind of what you're leaning towards?
Yeah. Right. But stuff comes in and we don't follow up. Yeah, and I don't want to dismiss things that have been changed because of the HRC or the IFC, but I would like to, every time we read one of these things, we come up with a specific action for that specific complaint. Like Holly mentioned, we can write a complaint to the medical board or the nursing board or whatever. That's something that we can do, and that nurse or doctor is gonna feel that, and that's going to change something. Every time something comes in, I think we need to think about it and figure out what we can do to make ourselves a pain to the system so the system doesn't want to deal with the pain that we're causing. And I don't feel like that happens most of the time.
You're right.
So, Dr. Fox?
Yes.
So if I could jump in here, I think that this, for a lot of the frustration for the committees exists from not having a framework, which is something that we said that we intended on doing. And if I if I could present a model in which it is successful. So the way that I think that ideally works is that the committee comes in, hears however the complaint process originates. The committee then requests information with an expressly stated concern. So if the action earlier was that the case was reviewed by quality control and you would like to have it reassessed because you think that they missed something, then we can identify what the specific issue is and then request it be reassessed through a letter, right? And then if a specific action is needs to be taken and the committee wishes to do that, then it'd be added to the agenda for the next meeting so that then the action can be taken. So if it's just a request for information or a letter, that come out of every meeting so that way we have it, not to add bureaucratic processes, but that way it's documented and immortalized so that we can follow up on it to say that on this date we requested this information and have we received it or have we not. In that fashion, we can establish a good working relationship with the agencies, and it would be my proposal to do that and work with ADOA and the agencies to escalate those issues prior to going to the media. In the event that we can't, then the committee has other alternatives, right? But through that fashion, letters, documenting the concerns or whatever specific requests exist, information or whatever action you would like to see taken. And then if the committee needs to take action specifically on something, it would be added to the agenda and that process.
If I may, that's what Jim, the secretary, is doing and agreed to do, is take to, that we have what we used to have. That's what we have in writing. So we have the issue, who's the follow-up, and we ought to just you think about how you want to do that. But yes, we certainly need that. And we ought to be getting that hopefully within a week or so of the end of this thing. Say, hey, the letter was, Ms. Pierce Bird was asked about this IAD number. We requested this information. Follow up on that. So that's what we need to do, and that's the value of the written. I mean, but I agree, and that's good. I mean,
I took notes for today because I know this hasn't, we haven't talked about the framework and we haven't presented it.
Yeah.
So I have those notes though. And
I absolutely agree that the problem that I think we have two problems. One is, maybe I've missed it, but I don't remember seeing documents as to what our follow-up is on items in the past month. I just don't remember seeing it. And I absolutely cannot remember what we agreed to do when a day or two has passed. I mean, I can remember to pick up toothpaste. I can't. It's about the extent of it.
I've been trying to start taking some notes on who's supposed to be doing what, and I didn't get it out to Jack for this last meeting, but I have a list here, so I'm going to start doing that for you.
See, and that's the next thing. I totally understand it. I wasn't at all being critical about that. I think the other problem is we get an IED, and it was from 2017. It comes to, because of the nature of it, it happens, and we get it. 2018. So we talk about it, and then we are going to ask for things. Next month, we come back, and Morrell, you know, maybe she didn't take down the number of the report. Maybe something wasn't clear. So then next month, we clarify what the request was. Another month goes by. We get some of the information. Another month goes by. We get some additional information. And one item stays on the agenda for months.
Sure.
I don't know how many.
We got to do it like the same. We have to have a process, and if it takes us taking an entire meeting to figure out how we're going to do that, I think it's worth our time.
I totally agree.
So
totally agree.
One of the things is I think if we each would own an item or issue that's come up that we want to take action on, that we each own and say, I will do this, or I'm going to follow up on this and bird dog this, then I think we can take some of that. But the problem is, it's sort of amorphous on that respect. And I
thought it was only coming from you. I thought that was we were only having you communicate as the chair. You were going to follow up.
That's actually not correct. That's not what it is. Anything that goes for request needs to go through the chair. You know, it could be copied to it. Like Joy was doing the stuff on the IED and the walk-ins. You know, she was doing that.
Okay.
But no, of course, I'm not the, you know, I'm just the person who needs to get the prize and stuff and do the agenda.
Well, are we going to get minutes again? Because the minutes used to be where we confirm and we would follow up and we would know who was supposed to do something.
And we're not going to get them at this point, but I think what Mike has done and what Jim is doing is getting the points of follow-up
yes.
we had before. Sure. That's what he's agreed, that's what we agreed to. You had something to say.
Yeah, so I just can speak on the ACC plan. We were talking about that. I think that it would be really helpful for us in our processes if your requests were done in writing, because that provides the opportunity for us to get back to the rest of our team with specifically what you're wanting in the data. We are not the end-all be-all of our organizations, and so having that request specifically in writing can also reduce that time of wait because we know exactly what you want.
But here's the problem with that. Let me suggest that none of us here, except you, get paid for being here. And so that's why Ms. Pierce Bird has been very good to say we can make a request, formal request, over the phone, and she clarifies it like she's done very well. And so, and if it's something very simple, like how many COT patients do you currently have, I don't want to have to put that in writing.
Well,
you know, I mean, hang on, please. You know, so that part of the thing we've agreed here with DOA is to say, hey, we can do that. I would like to be able to do that with you because to send this, you know, say, hey, can you do that? Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, we do a lot, and we're not getting anything for this besides our doing the right thing. That's the issue. And I want to comment that Ms. Kearsberg did give us some stuff last time on the request. She gave us a very well written out document answering walk-ins that the policies and procedures. It wasn't definitive, so we asked for more information, but you remember it was a written document she gave us, and that's what we should be getting from them at the moment. I'm sorry, Holly.
I think we can, I'm just going to throw this out. We sat around and we talked and we essentially dictated to morale what we were asking for. Why can't we simply have somebody with a computer send the email at the time that's being dictated?
You know why? Because we agreed here that that would be an appropriate way to take action. And I don't have the time to send the email. You don't follow through on it. You don't have the time. I don't follow through, Josh. Maybe you want to.
No.
If one of you wants to do it, fine. But
as we sit here.
No. You know what? As we sit here, I don't know, but it works verbally here. And I don't want to have to complicate it one more step.
But there is always a miscommunication. I mean, oftentimes she's like, oh, well, you didn't ask me for that. So I think that's a good idea.
I'll
bring my computer.
Okay.
Also, I think we need to be respectful of, like you said, we're all volunteering.
Yep.
We have to be respectful of time. We have to be respectful of their time. And I want to finish on time.
I agree. We were 20 minutes late. We're at 7:35, and I agree. We're going to finish on time. We've finished 5 minutes of time.
We
said
so.
And we.
If we're late, finish on time. It's our loss.
Yeah, but here's the point: why, if we each own a topic, then we can each send an email. If you own that topic, if you can each send an email, then you can do it. That may be one of the ways of dealing with it, and that's part of what you can do. Is who's the follow-up person? Then the meeting is adjourned. Do we other folks any objections to adjourning this meeting?
No, I'm glad we're having these conversations.
Yeah, so much. Yeah, I think it's great.
Okay, here's something.
Eddie,
somewhere. I don't
we have a motion on adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Right here.